Okay, it doesn't make any sense. It's fine.
Friction. The legs definitely shouldn't be working. Captain's Pod, star date 17/20/64.1. Welcome aboard the Starships Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a big short leap from the world of cinema sins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, a minute to her feels like a week for everyone else. It's Ambassador Danae. I will now turn her volume back up because I couldn't concentrate while she was rambling over my intro. Hello, Ambassador.
Does that mean that, like, I am too much for people? So, like, for me, it's just been an introduction, but to them, I've been too much for, like, a week?
No. For the time dilation? Yeah, I think
saying that word!
Oh, shit, damn it. I deliberately didn't put that in the intro because I knew
it
would
trigger
you.
But here we are. You just can't help it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I am being a bit of a butt.
You can't help dilation. It just happens. Yeah, I don't know which way round it's meant to be. I don't know if it's like you cram so much into a minute that it feels like a week, or it's like an ent thing where you say so little and it goes on for ages. I don't know. I don't think neither of them are very nice. How are you feeling, Ambassador? Can I have a bigger shovel for Christmas, please? I need to dig myself out of this hole.
All by yourself. Can we get to the show? Come on.
Okay, Ambassador. This week's episode is called Upper Decks. Our predictions from last week, I believe that this is a reference to TNG, or it's just going to be the episode Lower Decks, where we see those characters from that episode return, or it's going to be an episode dedicated to our main crew of Captain Freeman, Shax, Dr. T'Ana, Ransom, the Chief Engineer, Billups, all of the people that are the actual main crew, and it's going to be like an episode of TNG. Your prediction based on that was that you'd be bored. Do you stick to that prediction?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. No, there was a prediction in chat that I loved, though, and it was something about, was it time travel into the future?
Oh, yes. This was a prediction, I believe, from Wandering Winder, who believed that this might be a time jump into the future to see where our lower deckers are going to be when they become the upper deckers. So this will be some peek into the future where we see Captain Boimler, Captain Ensign Mariner, whatever. I kind of love that. That would be great. And it would fit with the alternate kind of timeline stuff as well.
I would love that. But mostly because this is the final season, although I know, we don't know that it's the final season until the last episode. But it would be really cool if they had accidentally given us a glimpse into the future. Because I'm the kind of person, when I read a book or I see a show, leaving the ... you can make up your own version doesn't usually make me feel great. Because my imagination is far too vivid and there's too many possibilities. I prefer someone to just say, this is where you are going to go eat dinner tonight. Or this is where this character ends their life happily on a, you know, plant a grape farm Picard vineyard situation.
Yeah, I can see that being where Boimler ends up. I'm the same, and it's not because
Boimler's going to go to Picard's.
Yeah, that'd be his dream. Retire vineyard? To Picard's vineyard. Yeah, I mean, Picard wouldn't let him be there, but yeah, that'd be his
That's
dream.
Exactly right. Like, how great would that be? He has to like infiltrate.
Yeah.
And he has to sneak on there, and it's an entire series of him just trying get into the mansion and become part of the crew. And he works himself up from just like the field worker all the way into the room.
It'd be better than Picard season two. I'm the same. Not because I don't have an imagination and I don't think I could make a satisfying end in my head, but because I want to know what the creators envision these people to be, like where they end up being, because it's their creation, it's their journey, they've taken us. I want them to take us across the finish line as well and see where their journey ends up being. That's more satisfying for me.
Agree.
Yep. Interestingly, there are three Star Trek shows that have already ended their shows by doing time jumps into the future. TNG, Voyager, and Enterprise, all three of them, their finales, end by showing us what happens in the future.
I think people want to see it.
They do, but it's like, it's such a cliche. It's such a trope at this point. I'd be amazed if Lower Decks didn't do it.
Okay, if Lower Decks does it, it needs to just be a glimpse to just graveyards.
Oh, yeah, that's the end. Yeah, eventually, well, this is where we end up. Other than Rutherford, who lives forever.
Oh, interesting. He is very robotesque.
It's just to Lynn on her own because she lives longer than anyone else. So the future like is Arwen. Just to Lynn. Yeah, just outlives all of her friends.
Oh, that is so sad.
Well, on that depressing note, let's head over to the holodeck and weep tears for lonely to Lynn. It's a great episode title. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what would you like from the replicator ambassador?
Hot soup, of course.
Oh, wasn't it chowder? Is chowder soup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a type of soup.
I think it's in the soup category.
Yeah, it's just a very chunky soup.
Yeah, yeah. Are we wrong about that?
No, I think it's a soup. I'm going to stick with that. Yeah, it's the most important question.
I want the hot chowder.
I actually do want some hot chowder. It's freaking freezing in England right now, and I want some chowder. But what I'm actually going to get from the replicator is a gourd. Oh. I just want a gourd. A selection of gourds.
Just some gourds.
Yeah.
Was this episode meant to be a Halloween episode?
I mean,
it was very Halloween-y.
Would suggest so. I think that's
and the zombies?
Two, yeah, that's like two Halloween episodes. Neither of them took place anywhere near Halloween. It's amazing.
It's also, there was like a little bit of gore, you know, when the bug guy came out of the other. Yeah.
Shed his alien skin suit to reveal his non-humanoid features. It was amazing.
That's right.
Give us a synopsis, Ambassador. Although no big surprises, to be honest.
Sure. In today's episode, we learned that Ian's prediction was correct.
Probably my best one yet.
Was all about those upper deckers and very little about those that we actually
I know what's coming
want to see more of but can't. But are we glad that we got to see a little bit more of them before Lower Decks wraps up forever?
Are we?
Stay tuned. Today their mission was to work with roly-poly invisicows and an invading cricket species and their own internal demons, whether it's pain management or being haunted about mass genocide.
Yeah.
And also the Eiffel Tower makes an appearance. That's about it.
Can't have a romantic dinner without Paris, apparently. Overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador. This is to echo your prediction from the beginning of the show, is that you would be incredibly bored if this was an episode just about our upper deckers. So how did you feel about it?
Oh, you can't be bored in this episode. This is one of those where even if you don't like what's happening, it's so fast paced that something about your body's survival mechanisms kicks in and you're experiencing the adrenaline rush of fast-paced storytelling that is being launched into your eyeballs. And so there's something about like you have to stick around for the crazy wild ride. And so I found myself about partway through going, maybe I'm glad that I get to see these characters sort of like one more time. And maybe I'm glad to see them like epically approach their day-to-day lives. Maybe I like that the perception of the Lower Deckers is that everything is boring and nothing happens, but that's because they just miss out on these kinds of things. That there's some people on the ship who may not know at the end of the day the insanity that has been weaving itself through the fabric of reality for other people, and that I think I actually like this episode, but but that's because I'm choosing to pretend it's not the final season. So I think I did. I think I like the episode today.
Yeah, it is. The timing is very interesting. It is an episode. It feels like I was watching it for 3 minutes, maybe. Like it packs in a lot of story, deliberately so. Like the whole conceit is that it packs in 7 different stories into
it's
one episode.
Crazy.
Like all of like the main cast B plots that you would see in an episode of TNG, every single one of them is in this episode. And that's the function of it, which is why for me, you know how like we love doing food metaphors. I'm sorry if it annoys anyone.
I was about to do one as well.
Every restaurant, I would love it if we had the same metaphor here.
We probably do.
it sounds strange, but putting a burger onto your restaurant, if you're a restaurant, is a choice because it will be the thing 75% of people choose. They will go in and have a burger because it's consistent. You don't have to risk anything. I'm going to get a cheeseburger, so it's going to be nice. That's kind of what this felt like to me because it was covering all of like the possible main crew tropes. It was a fine cheeseburger that didn't have a lot of depth. Like, I didn't take much out of it at all other than that was some fun stuff to watch. Okay, I guess technically I'm full from this episode, but it did very, very little for me in terms of like sustenance and filling. The only like metaphor that I really like is what kicks off the episode with Boimler saying, like, hey, maybe they are living lives. I can't remember, Mariner or Boimler. Maybe they're all living lives that we don't know about. And like that acknowledgement that the conceit of Lower Decks is that we don't know what the Lower Deckers are doing and the Lower Deckers may not know what the Upper Deckers are doing. Like acknowledging that conceit was fun for me, but it only went into an episode I didn't really do much for.
I loved it. I had such a good time. I don't think I've spent as much time with the Upper Decks crew as maybe you have, having watched more of the show than me too. So like getting to see Billups was like, oh my God, what a great character.
And oh, then interesting. Yeah, that's Dr. a good point.
Ta'ana, you know, she is fascinating to me with just this whole pain thing. And it's goofy and silly. And I, so many laws had to be broken with just the doctor alone.
Oh yeah, for real.
The history of the security officer, like just, there's this interesting kind of thing that it did for me where it balanced out their character background, but the star for me was Billups in today's episode. What about like, if you had to pick your favorite flavor, and I do want to do my food metaphor, but if you had to pick a favorite flavor from the episode, which one did you like kind of the most?
It's Billups as well.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be because I'm always a sucker for a Geordi episode. Especially when it's something really technical, like the bottle episodes where they're all in engineering and it's Geordi and it's Data and it's an LCAR screen and all they're doing is talking backwards and forwards with techno babble and typing in things really fast and rerouting all of the stuff to solve the problem. And if at the end of it, the Enterprise happens to do like a handbrake turn around a meteor to escape a nebula, I'm happy. Like, yeah. So I think that's why like the Billups thing appealed to me the most as well. But that isn't saying much because the other B plots were so ridiculous that it went past
it
the
was
point
so ridiculous.
Of me being able to enjoy it because it was so like, what are we actually doing? Like the Shanks one I get because it's all in his mind. That would be like a close second. But the Clickets, it's ridiculous. Dr. Ta'ana being a masochist and getting like tortured didn't work for me. The ransom thing is fucking ridiculous. I don't know. They were like so far into the realm of absurd that I didn't enjoy it. And that hurts. That hurts me to say. It really does.
I think my food metaphor will help as we digest the rest of this. I imagine this episode is like if my 7-year-old daughter cooked like 7 or 8 different things for me and then just sort of say, test this, try this, do this, test this. And it feels like I took a spoonful of whatever she wanted me to taste and she shoved it in my mouth and asked if I liked it and then didn't wait to hear my response. And my palate had no chance to process what I was eating
because
before
it
got to
matter.
The next thing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And then those merged together and then by the 7th or 8th spoonful of different things, I don't really know what the taste menu was.
it wasn't the point. It was like experiencing all of these different things. Don't worry about what it tastes like. You've experienced it.
Yeah, don't worry what was in there. And so as we kind of go back through and look at everything individually, for example, I don't like the taste of licorice. So if one of her little spoonfuls had licorice in it, when it passed into my brain, I'm like, oh, that's not something that I like, but it doesn't matter because really quickly after is peanut butter.
Yeah.
And so now that we're going to go back through, I think I'm going to find more flavors I probably don't like. Mm-hmm. Like some of the extreme storytelling with Dr. Ta'ana and even Shaxx for me. I know some of the chats like really, really liking Shaxx.
Yeah,
that
I liked the Shaxx
wasn't bit. That interesting to me, but this is the kind of buffet that you're going to find whatever you like and kind of move on. Ransom also was annoying because at one point I wrote down in my notes, like, why are they treating him like an idiot? I've seen such great moments in the past of him having this leadership style that I was coming to respect a little bit.
Yes.
And then it just stabbed it to death in this one. Like, it was like,
this is pushing it all the way to the extreme. It's like, we kind of, there's a subtlety to how Ransom acts that we were giving him some credit for, but then this spells it out and takes it to like the extreme of the concept.
Right.
And that broke it for me.
Yeah. I don't know if again, looking at the individual ingredients, that I am going to be super excited, but I think overall, and this is something that was kind of mentioned also in the chat too, about this episode. I wonder if I can quickly find it, but it's kind of the idea of how they put the whole episode together and how wild and crazy it would be if you tried to take a quick 1 second snapshot of what's going on a starship at any given day. And we're just focusing on the Upper Decks crew, but it must just be a wild experience. And I like the idea that we can do that. I like that it's in this format where we can be a bit silly and wild. And like, how would they have accomplished this with live action? You know, ghost of Shax. Insane. Yeah, it would really fall short and it would be really disconnected from how we consume our kind of more serious content, a la Strange New Worlds style, which they usually have sometimes multiple plot lines going on. It's just in this case, it was so incredibly extreme and sometimes very, very silly. Dr. Ta'ana, for example. But then it was kind of paced well a little bit with Captain Freeman sort of just casually walking through her day.
Yeah, I'm glad that hers was like quite a calm element. There was a nice little break between like the hyper frenetic scene she was like kind of connecting together. I don't know that this is avoidable, and I'm trying not to be too critical of the show because I don't think it's missing a trick. I think this is a product of what it was trying to do with this episode. Like, I think the bug is the feature. Like, the goal was to, hey, you know, when we have these random episodes where Worf is fighting a battle from his past, Deanna is annoyed about something, Crusher is annoyed about some medical thing, Geordi has a B plot. It is deliberately pulling together all of the main crew, TNG, Voyager, B plots that weave together that we haven't seen and doing them all at once. Mm-hmm. So I think there's no way they didn't know that this is cramming a lot into one episode, but it still doesn't work. It still doesn't work. Like, I'm so glad this is just a one-off, and I think I'll end up giving it a bit of a pass internally because it's the function is to show what all of these main crew people are doing because we don't have a full season of playing with them. That's not the point of the show.
This is an episode I actually want to watch again because I think I'm missing some of what the writers probably very intentionally did with the layout and the structure of the episode. And it does telegraph itself by saying when Captain Freeman says, see, this is why we attend the conferences in the morning and do the debriefs and stuff, because there was a tidbit of information that ended up paying off later in the show about Cricket's not doing well with compliments, and that kind of is what saves the day at the end. But like that conference room meeting moment, that I think I missed some things in there of the crew kind of coming together and trying to talk about the important things that are going on, give everybody like a quick heads up before heading off to their stations for the day and doing what they're doing for the day. Oh, they don't just sit on the bridge. You know, they're going out to the ship, doing things that need to be done. And then when shit goes sideways, that's where they assemble to make the big decisions all kind of in one place. And so it's this interesting look at what life is like. And I think it would be fast paced. And we've talked about this before, how it just seems utterly ridiculous to us that there's this casual reaction to all of these things happening. And yet if that was just your every fucking day, that you have a little chat with your crew and then all this stuff happens and, you know, she's sitting there watching people play the tuba and give birth. I know it's not a tuba, sorry. And
oh, I thought it was a tuba.
Was it a tuba?
I think it was.
Barophone. I don't know what it's called. So there's this, and she's doing all of these things. And by the time it gets to the point in the day where she would need the cricket information, she's having to pull that out of this part of her brain that has been flooded with other things going on.
Yeah.
So it was it's interesting to think about how much is intentional. Like, did the 7-year-old think about, you know, the licorice and peanut butter dishes side by side, or was that an accident? I don't know. Am I reading into things? I don't know.
maybe like it is the clickets thing, like in compliments, that is set up for the line at the end when she's like, this is why you listen to the briefing. It's not just filler, it's important. Well, it's important because that's the way the script was written. But that's kind of like the build up for that. The rest of the briefing is to insult to Anna and give her some criticism that she has to think about throughout the day, which is okay, cool, to reestablish her. That's the one I really struggled with. Like, what was the purpose of like the Dr. to Anna story there? Like, to reassess pain management and like why she's being so stingy with the painkillers. Like, that's, yeah, I can't get my head around.
It's in service of the joke that this doctor had changed or altered how people report their pain. It's either I'm in no pain or I'm okay. Like, whenever it had the smiley face,
yeah,
on the, you know, when you go to the doctor's office right now, they have you rated on a scale of like 1 to 10. She just had two options. Yes, pain, I'm okay. You know, so the joke, so in service of the joke, she needed to change that back. And, you know, obviously there had been a lot of complaints about that. I don't know if that's something that had come up in previous episodes and this is sort of a payoff of that, or if they're just kind of like digging into her extreme character.
I get the joke. I just want to know what's beyond the joke, other than the ha ha, she doesn't understand pain the same way we do. Like, that's what's beyond that, because the joke is fine, but there's usually like something underneath the joke that's actually a thing that we're exploring.
To me, it was entirely it's just a character part that this species does not feel pain like everyone else and needed to be reminded of that. I kind of related to that a little bit because I don't feel pain the same way others do. And so even with Iris, I worry that I'm not giving her the attention that she might need if she hurts herself. I don't react a lot when she will fall down or something, and I wait to see how she reacts, and then I kind of gauge off of that.
That's smart. Yeah.
But even still, she was talking about something kind of hurting yesterday, and I asked if she wanted me to take a look at it or whatever. But in my head, I'm just like, yeah, it'll be fine. You know?
Yeah.
So there's this indifference that this character had to other people, and that character should be more open to that there's some people need to have pain medicine because they can't tolerate as much. So I think that's possible. And that's, to me, this episode is, it doesn't really matter what her story was. It's going to have something and tell us something about this character that maybe the audience wants to know. And I don't know if this is true because you're the one who's seen more of it, but when I'm thinking about the episode, it's helping me to give just a little bit more a detail about the Upper Decks crew and care about them a little bit more. Like, I did not understand people's adoration of Billups until today.
Yeah, no, I get that. There are like a couple of Billups episodes that I think are in season two that you haven't seen that really add a bit more depth to him. The live chat, I want to mention David, because I'm like so perplexed by the Dr. Tarana thing. David said it was an extreme homage to when the Doctor on Voyager gave himself the flu to understand what the crew was feeling, because he was like being very flippant about people with headaches and stuff. And he programs himself to have the flu so that he can experience what it feels like.
I think I remember that.
But he sets a time limit on it, and B'Elanna steps in and removes the time limit and makes the symptoms worse. And he's just like, I've broken myself. I've broken my program. I'm miserable. I may die. This flu is the worst. And then B'Elanna comes in and fixes it and says, no, it's all right. It wouldn't have been real if you knew when it was going to end. So I changed the end date of the flu so that you'd really experience it. So, and that, like, that makes sense to me. And I guess this is just a watered down version of that. I get it.
This is not watered down. This would be hyped up version of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to your point, I don't know what more that told me about T'Ana. Like that, if the function has to be giving us some more experience with the Upper Deckers, I don't know what more I got from T'Ana that I didn't already have. And I think I agree with you.
And as we evaluate the different stories, I think I come to the same place. Wandering in the chat says, coming off of last week where she said she didn't want to do cosmetic surgery stuff, if she also doesn't want to manage pain, why is she a doctor?
Yeah, right. What is she doing?
It is interesting to kind of go, okay, so what, you know, what is the adoration or what is the motivation rather of this career choice? And this did not answer that question. If that's a question of yours, it kind of only proposes more, but it does serve as a vehicle for delivering some really funny moments. Like when Absolutely. She bursts out of the room and she's in feral cat form and she is shot with a weapon and I think he says that was set to kill, and she's like, I'm set to kill, or whatever she says.
So am I. Just like yeah. calls the shit out of him. We all love Dr. T'Ana doing that. Like, wings that's are so flying. Fun.
And then yeah. she lands in like what we call sometimes hero pose, but yeah. it's like cat squat pose yeah. in the front of the camera. That's just a great shot. It's so fun to see, and it's such a unique thing to see in Star Trek world because that would not be happening in any other format for us to enjoy. But it's definitely one of those where you got to kind of, if you don't like that flavor, move on to the next one because we got a lot to cover. You know, you got a lot we can pull out of this episode.
I do love at the end when she's being comforted while like the soup is on her and he's just like, there's a good kitty. And she's like, fuck you. The like purrs because she's kind of getting smiles. The head scratches.
Yeah.
So cute. I love that. Back to like the very, very beginning, the thing that did tweak my brain the most was like how like meta and spelling out Mariner and Boimler were telling us what this episode was going to be. I was like, oh, we're the stars of the show. Nothing happens here. We're kind of like the main characters. And like really spelling it out, that made me chuckle. I did like that. But I loved the perspective that I think it was Mariner that said, it's not like our command crew are pretty crap. Like they're not great. It's not like they're Kirk, Janeway or Picard. And it was interesting for me because I think that was really deliberate. And
they didn't say Picard. They said Sisko.
Oh, did they? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I just want to point that out because I was waiting for Picard and I heard Sisko and I was like, well, that's not my captain.
That's not my bald captain. So I think it's interesting that maybe there, I hope that's a nod to the fact that maybe during like season one, season two of Picard, of TNG, before Picard was legendary, during like the early seasons of Deep Space Nine, where Sisko isn't even a captain yet, he's a commander, Janeway had her first command was Voyager. So from all of those, we know them as legends now, but when their lower deckers were working, were they also thinking, man, it's not like our command crew is Kirk and some other famous captain. Does every lower decker, are all of them unaware of how incredible their command crew is? It's not just like our lower deckers that are the exception. And that's the actual message, is that every command crew is legendary and every lower decks crew is legendary. It's just hard to see it when you're in the puzzle piece and you're in the kitchen and you don't get to see all of the bits of the machine way. So that gave me something to really ponder about that was interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that angle.
I'm going to skip around in the episode a bit. I want to go to the Delta crew, Beta crew fighting.
Yes.
In the shuttle bay. What do you think that was in service of the greater story for Lower Decks?
Well, that's a nod to, you have like the different shifts on the crew. And I think in Lower Decks, the episode in TNG, they have a dig about like the different shifts not getting along because it's based on like the some shifts would never interact with each other. So they Delta shift would be doing like the night shift or something. So they would Beta shift would be asleep when Delta shift are awake. So I think it's just a tribalism thing where this is one of the rare occasions where Delta shift and Beta shift would have to work together. And we are tribal people for the sake of being tribal. So they can't articulate why they don't like each other. They just don't because they're on different teams. It's a sports reference thing as well. Okay. Like, I just don't like that team because they're not my team.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was a little confused about what that was doing for the story besides, I mean, I know Ransom has an opportunity to quote unquote shine.
Yeah.
As a quote unquote leader in mm-hmm. his quote unquote unconventional ways.
Yeah. That's the bigger function of it. They need, yeah. he needs a problem to solve. And this is his yeah. problem. Yeah.
Should we talk about Ransom then, since we're kind of in the shuttle bay in our imaginations right now?
Yeah.
Just get that out of the way.
Yeah, we'll get it out of the way. Like, the bugs were fun. Like, the bugs that can, like, cloak themselves and then zip away. Like, that's a fun bit of slapstick and, like, an interesting alien creature that they have to deal with as well. But his logic of, I'm going to give them a common enemy, it... There are easier ways to get this job done. Like, there are, instead of boring them to death, just be a dick. Be a Jellicoe and just, like, scream at them and, like, beat them. Like, there's a way to give them a collective enemy that doesn't mean boring them with a story that goes on for ages and then falling asleep at your post and, like, putting everyone at risk. Like, there's easier ways to get this done. Or just be a... Don't try and manipulate them. Just try... Just be a normal fucking human. But it's a cartoon. I'm trying not to take it too seriously. But it annoyed me. It really, really did annoy me. Ransom's spelling out his method of command.
Yeah, his way of leading has always caused me to kind of scratch my head. But I think for me, the greater, and this is certainly something sinful, but not something I wrote down in my sin. So I'll just say it now before I forget. It felt wrong to me that when they get to the shuttle bay and you have the Beta Delta crew arguing back and forth with each other, that Ransom wasn't more serious about how that looks to this person who has come on board to do this thing. And yeah. even though, and the story knows, the writers know that that person doesn't matter at the end of the day because they're an infiltrator, but they don't know that. And so the casualness of just letting this person see this infighting that ultimately causes damage to the ship, and like no one gets in trouble for being really unprofessional. Like, it just seemed that the conversations between the two of them could have lasted a lot. Like, it could have been shorter and been more believable. Like, and maybe because of Ransom's leadership, he lets it go on because he has his own ways of dealing with that stuff. I just think that if it was a regular episode and that wasn't an infiltrating, you know, doppelganger guy,
yeah,
that would not have happened because Star Trek would not have let that sort of behavior linger with their crew. That would have been like, hey guys, you got to pull it together. We've got a job to do. And they'd been like, you're right. Sorry about that. Let's get it in line. We'll talk about our issues privately later. Or it would happen in 10 forward or whatever. You know what I mean?
Or I'd hope the Federation guy would be reporting Ransom straight back to the Federation. Just like, there is some fucking weird leadership happening on the Cerritos. We need to investigate them immediately.
Yeah, that was my first sign that something else was happening. And it made me uneasy because it was disrespectful.
Yeah, it feels weird.
It just doesn't feel, yeah, it doesn't feel like it's something that would be allowed unless the story is going to a place where this character that's trying to figure out how to milk the space cows or whatever is going to do their job. I don't know if that's why he was actually there. I wasn't paying attention to that part, but.
I think he was just there to supervise, like, the creatures being brought on board so that the Federation biologist could investigate them properly. I think he was just there like in a supervisory capacity.
I will say I now would love to have a space cow, like plush, roly-poly, like little...
It's adorable, wasn't
like
it?
Like a little pillow. You remember so the adorable. Popples from the 80s? And its whole shtick was that you could fold it into itself, okay. into this pocket, and it would become a ball. Oh. And then you could pull it out. And it was really, really cute. I think you could turn them inside out, like in that way.
I love it.
I loved my Popple. I would love to have another Popple. But if they made a Popple version of the space cow, that would be great. Because it rolls up.
Yeah.
And I love that it goes invisible. And it has a hide that lets it hide. Wah, wah, wah.
Best line of the episode.
I do love the shenanigans happening in the shuttle bay, though, just to throw all caution and disrespect to the wind.
Yeah.
That was a really fun set, so to speak.
Yeah.
Just this sort of like they're trying to pull in this space animal and then they accidentally pull in this rock that attracts more. Why are they not just closing the shuttle bay? I don't know, yeah, but still it was fun and the chaos was exciting.
No, that it was fun. Like the energy, I can almost like it's distracting, like all of the fun and the energy behind them trying to wrangle these bug cows. They don't even look like cows. It's ridiculous.
But they did moo.
Did they moo? Oh, I missed a
they
moo.
They did.
Oh, that's adorable.
They're like,
that's adorable. I guess we can move on to Shaxx. So you said that this was the bit of the episode that didn't quite work for you. This is the one I liked more than the others because, like, I get it. It's like, it's a classic dealing with, like, inner demons and metaphorical internal battles. It's a very, very Star Trek B-plot thing to do. But it didn't work too well for you?
No. It felt like, I don't know how to describe this. Is this the first time we've seen him have this happen?
Yes.
Okay. It was so much.
Yeah, it was a lot. A lot of exposition in this one. That's probably why I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of dealing with his demons.
Yeah, but well, why did you like it? Because I'm trying to kind of understand why I wasn't connecting, you know, to it.
Yeah.
We basically had an invisible mental battle. A breakdown of mass murder and a war, and he was seeing things, you know. And I do love that it ends with therapy. I do love that, but yeah, I don't know. What did you like about it?
I think it's the exact opposite problem that I had with the Doctor to Anna part. Like, this does give me some more insight into Shaxx, and it's not like anything surprising. Like, we know he's Bajoran. We know he's was part of the resistance. We know all of this about him. We know he's obviously not going to be a fan of Cardassians, but it just gave it a bit of extra depth for me. It felt like a Worf episode where, yeah, we know Worf is a Klingon. We know he has all of this troubles with like connecting with his traditions and whatnot. But it was just fun to see Shaxx actually deal with it and spell it out. Like, we know that there was some big battle. The explosion is probably why he lost like the use of his eye, battling a ton of Cardassians. And it's nice to see that he's still dealing with that and struggling with that. And then the joke on top of it is that it's through this vision quest where he has to fight his inner self. And then that gets translated into fighting the Klickitz. For me, that's where the joke is there, but the joke is overlaid on top of something that's actually meaningful and something that I actually did want some like extra context and extra depth to. I didn't have that with T'Ana or Ransom really so much.
Yeah. They could have given us interesting information about Ransom and how he became the type of leader that he is. And they could have given us some back information, I guess, well, for the Doctor, maybe it's just like her species doesn't feel pain or something like that. But they did choose to kind of give more understanding of the security officer's approach to, or maybe what makes them so intense,
yeah,
potentially. But he's also just like a big, great guy too. But this is definitely the warrior sort of side of him. The Battle of Timpasa is what I wrote down.
Yeah, no idea what it was, but just it'll be something that happened on Bajor with the Cardassians for sure.
I think the parts that were confusing for me is there must be symbolism in fighting his younger self that then turned into a ghost with red eyes instead. And there was just a lot going on with the interaction that could have been simplified in order to serve the greater story of the episode, which is there was already a lot kind of going on. And every time we cut over to his story, there's even like more going on. There's a bomb. There's a whole bunch of people that he's killed. They're all fighting each other and he's having an out of body experience and he's fighting himself. And his self is saying, as time passes, I get stronger while you grow older and fade away. I think to control you, I have to control myself. So I guess like the idea that in the back of Shaxx's mind, he's always on the verge or he's sometimes on the verge of letting this warrior just completely take over. And that is a very Worf-esque vibe. And to understand more of why he's holding, like, I understand why Worf is kind of holding back in a way. Because I spent a lot of episodes with him and they've given me some context as to his demeanor and what he's kind of doing. But Shaxx, I don't like, what was his motivation just not to murder everybody? Like what would happen if this person took over?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the Bajorans have very recently gone from fighting for survival and using like guerrilla warfare, like the Cardassians would call them terrorists, because the tactics that they had to use were like just absolute desperation. Every single mission that you go on could be your last one to fight for freedom. And then transitioning out of that survival instinct into, okay, not everything is battle stations, not everything is red alert. This can now be measured because we're not on the back foot anymore. Like we are, he's part of a crew. He's not being occupied by an alien species. He has his independence back. So not every single mission has to be fight to the death, blow up the warp core. And I think that's why, like, his running joke is eject the warp core. Like he always goes straight to 100%, because when he's fighting against the Cardassians, the Bajoran militia had the underground had no choice but to be as extreme as they could to try and defeat the Cardassians. So I think it's him wrestling back to like kind of some form of normality, but that fighter inside him is still there saying, nope, there's a battle around the corner. You've got to be ready.
That makes sense.
And I'm going to be a sucker for that, because that's getting like deep into like the Bajoran psyche, and that's really fun.
And also you have a whole series, Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely.
Where I don't usually, like the Bajorans, the Cardassians, these kind of, those stories are not storylines I've dug into a bunch. I've seen the people on screen, you know, in those makeups, and so can recognize that species, but I don't have the history that you do. And I think maybe that's also part of why it's interesting for you to kind of see, oh, wow. So here he is like in this wartime, just single-handedly taking out all of these people. Just
dozens of Cardassians.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, I'm going to read into a lot, but the red eyes and that like demon possessing him, there's the wormhole aliens that like believe the Bajorans are their children and they're like the gods, the prophets that they worship. But there's also the Pares, which is like the devil. So they're the evil versions, the other side of the coin. And I think when the Pares possessed, they possessed Gul Dukat and they've possessed other people, I think there was like a red glowing eye thing that happens when they get possessed. So I think this is like he worships the prophets, but the Pares are fighting for his soul as well. And I think that's something else he's battling with. Again, someone in the chat mentioned this could have been an entire episode. Hard agree.
It really could have.
Absolutely could have done. Yeah. And I know that's not the point of this episode, but love that as an idea.
But we're lucky that it was in this episode, because he would have been murdering actual people.
Yes.
When they came in to say, hey, are you okay?
What if just random crew members had come in and he murders them?
That's one of the biggest sins of the episode for me is
completely
when
sense.
People should be going to check up on this guy. They will all be whatever he said, something about Papa Bear or whatever.
Welcome to the bear pack.
The bear pack. Yeah. What a welcome. Is that how he actually welcomes people? Just breaking their spine.
That's so good. Jeez. But I love that he apologized. He's like, sorry.
Sorry about that, guy.
I do want to talk about a couple of positives. One that I absolutely loved was at the opening briefing. Billups is saying that he plans on like repairing something specific on the bridge, and I missed the name of it. And Ransom...
Are you talking about the thing that falls down?
Yes.
Yes, I wrote this down.
Oh my God, it's perfect.
I wrote it down because I thought that it was so funny.
Yes.
It's the geek explanation as to why the panels are falling.
And because Ransom says, oh, I'm so glad that, like, I'm so glad you're going to fix that, because they keep falling on my head whenever we're in a battle. And it's a reference to when the bridge is exploding. Why do girders keep falling down? Why do rocks and rubble keep exploding from everywhere? Like, the bridge is such a dangerous place to be, especially during Voyager times when they're in a battle and everything falls down around them. And Billups explains it. He says, oh, the reason that there are girders and then there are rocks in the ceiling, it's like divert the warp core neutron flow. It's such a beautiful Lower Decks thing to give an in-universe canon explanation for why there's rubble in the walls. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And it's a real, it's like a side conversation. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever, you know.
But it's great. I love it.
Even I stopped and said, oh, that's funny.
It's so funny.
That's really funny. Can we talk a little bit more about Billups, though? I know you've got probably more things that were really positive, but I really loved, and I think saying that I loved it is fine, but I kind of want to get into it a little bit. There's this amazing thing about engineering. It's one of my favorite sets for TNG.
Yeah,
the warp core, but they take these panels off, and it's just so fun to look at. And then he's explaining that it's just this overheated plasma stuff, and it's because he had this retrofitted thing he just kind of forgot that he was supposed to go back and fix. And all of a sudden, they're strapped to the side of the room, and for some reason, the panels are now extending like even higher than I remember them being in the previous scene, but whatever.
Way higher.
And then they're just ziplining up. They're like tugging and then just zipping up to the top, and you have this person that's working beside Billups who obviously is a little nervous about everything. And every single time we cut back to engineering, I was having such a fun time with it. Like from him just showing such a delight in, you take off one panel, it's now your responsibility to figure out what's going on. You can't just put the panel back.
That explains like the extra of the week. And I was like, what's this random engineering extra that we're dealing with? And it's like the logic behind that is, oh yeah, they're the person that found the problem. Therefore, this week they have to deal with it. Again, explaining like one of the bugs of older episodes of Star Trek is so fun.
It's so fun. And then when we come back and they're doing the side-by-side working at the stations, just techno babbles just pouring out of their mouths. And then we get to the scene where he's trapped in a tube with smoke inside of it saying his farewells. And how did that hit you? Because
every
that
engineer
was,
wants to die in a tube.
Yes, alone in a tube. And then there's this, emergency axe. And she's, well, what do you think an emergency is? And she breaks it. And then the day just kind of continues. And another person comes along and says, hey, you want to go check out this panel? And he's like, yes, I do. Because he's a machine. And I loved it. I loved it so, so much.
Other than Shanks, is the most cohesive story in the episode for me, or the most satisfying. I guess the Ransom one is cohesive to it, just I don't like it. But I really like this because it is a day in the life of engineering. And that's the overall theme of the episode. It's a day in the life of this person from Upper Decks. And I love that because it's every engineering trope.
It was great.
He says, you've got to get past this, but remember, its weakness is talking about something sad that happened in your childhood.
That's the part I didn't like. So what is that?
So that is such... I watched an episode... I can't remember what I watched, but I watched an episode of Star Trek the other day. And this random extra is just like talking about something that happened in their childhood. And it's just... This is like a movie trope as well. Like, you have to have this sincere scene where we break into this new character or the main character and they say, well, when I was 12, I watched my mama die as she fell out of a tree and I was never the same since. And it always has to be some sad, traumatic thing from their childhood that relates back to the story that's happening now. And maybe it's like, hey, why are you so angry with me all the time? Well, you've got the same eye color as the dog that left me when I was a child. That's why I don't like you. So it's just that trope of, no, the story's got to be really sad. And that, like, makes your presence as an extra worthwhile. Because you're not just here as a random extra. It's because your backstory matters.
I definitely see what you're saying. The part that I really, really did not enjoy was that it was this AI monster. Way too far for me. Like
the AI golem, I loved
way
it.
Way too far.
The Elkos thing just came out as a... I loved that.
I would believe that the doctor would allow someone to torture her to find a pain scale 100 times more than I would believe that there's a way that Billup has created a way for the computer screen to push itself out of the side of a panel and grow into a face and a mouth and then consume him. So
my defense is that the Binars made it. The Binars are very, very Binars. Good at computers, and they made it. So they made the AI golem, and anything is possible with AI.
That's your explanation. Is Binar made it, and AI has a lot of possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it made, like, seeing the Elkars panel come to life just gave me such joy, because there's not many things that we haven't personified. Like, the Enterprise has been given a personality. Basically, everything has come to life at some point other than the Elcar's operating system itself. And they just, it tickled me. But I get it.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I'm not saying it doesn't work as a humor beat. I'm saying that inside the actual world of Star Trek, I don't know how that is possible. And the idea that the solution is to tell a sad story from like from a humor perspective.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha.
Got oh, I'm being a complete hypocrite. Like
but
this
like,
is.
But from a but from an actual practical perspective. Yeah. That is one of the dumbest things this show has ever done.
This is just as unbelievable and stupid as T'Ana being tortured and Ransom falling asleep on the deck.
It's not just as stupid. It's way worse.
For me, it's just as stupid, but I'm a hypocrite because it worked for me. And that's why I think this episode does work overall. There's just so many parts of it that are too weird for me. And too, it's so weird talking about Lower Decks because I feel like such a dick because it's like, it's just a cartoon. It's just fun, but it's in Star Trek. So I have like 900 episodes of like, man, this is so contradictory. What am I doing? It's so complicated to talk about.
Here's what would be absolutely wild to do. I'm not saying we should do this, but I'm just saying it'd be wild is to, in this episode alone, because you could probably do it for any Lower Decks episode, is to take it and rank it in order of the most likely thing to happen on a starship to the absolute impossible least likely thing. And I know writers can explain away anything today. Yeah. They explained away while the panels on the ceiling have rocks in them. It's just taken a long time for them to get to that. But to me, this would be the most least likely. This would be the extreme example of the least likely thing to ever happen on a starship.
I disagree. I think that the least likely for me is having a chief medical officer that's just like, split my atoms, cut me open, like perform surgery on me. Like, that is more unbelievable personality wise for me than an AI thing. We've seen fucking ridiculous technology in Star Trek. Like, that the this AI golem doesn't fun. Even crack the top 10.
This is why it would be really, really, really fun to do it, because I would have such a different expectation, and I have almost no credentials with which to back myself up.
No, I'm bringing like a list of like citations, and you're just like, yeah, but feelings, yeah instinct.
Which is important, like you said. This is an important part. What other parts of the episode today worked for you or you kind of liked? I mean, I think we talked about...
Yeah,
we didn't talk about Captain Freeman.
The only bit we haven't talked about is Freeman doing, like, captains are always busy, so they always have, like, appointments to care that, for, things to do.
It just did what it did for me. That wasn't really anything that was... That was fine.
It doesn't really kick off until the Klickit reveals itself to her, and then that kicks off and she has the, you don't like compliments, so I salute you.
Because I'm paying attention in my meetings. Everyone
goes off, yeah. It didn't do much for me, to be honest.
And I guess our actual Lower Deck appears at the end. So they're at the beginning, at the end, like a delicious sandwich.
Good little sandwich.
Did anything happen when they returned that was interesting? I don't think I pointed anything out.
Talin ribs Mariner, which was fun. Has a joke at her expense. I'm like, I made a joke at your expense. Boom.
Boom.
I got a nice little chuckle out of that. No, not much else happens. The Freeman thing is the... Okay, it's the thing that brings everyone together, but it was probably the second weakest part for me. The compliments work, so they all run away. Functionally, that asks me so many questions.
Yeah, they were in far more danger from the roly-poly cows than they were anything else.
Yeah.
The invisible roly-poly cows, like, that's pretty cool. And the little cow at the end, and you see it trying to run to catch up to its mom and herd.
It's amazing. Just
moving its little bitty legs as fast as it could, and then ultimately deciding that rolling through space is better, which doesn't make any sense.
The legs definitely shouldn't be working. I did like Strong and Brave, Wise and True. That's what makes a Cerritos crew. Like, they have to have their own charm. Was really funny to me to match the Lower Decks. Lower Decks.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. I think that's why they did that.
Even though you hate that kind of stuff in real life.
Even though I hate that team building bullshit in real life. The couple of other references that came up was the guy that's doing the poetry, the one-man show thing, says that he felt invisible, like Geordi and Ro was a reference to the next phase where everybody thinks Geordi and Ro die, but they actually just end up with a being phase cloaked and they're invisible, but they think they're ghosts until they realize that they're not. So it's just a nice random reference.
I also want to mention the character that is, and that there's like the last two episodes. It's the guy that talks in metaphors.
Oh, Kishon. Yeah.
What a great character.
Kishon is great. He needs his own episode. He's incredible.
I don't know about that. Because then we're going into the same problem back that into we Darmok. Had with it. I don't want to go back into Darmok.
Well, he's that species. But, that's him.
But I do like the presence of this alien species because, and it's such a casual thing. Like he's like, when he reports in and he's basically like, when the water's still, like just nothing happening over here, everything's good. I understand that reference. That's kind of nice. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I love him. He's great. We didn't actually get a lot of time for it. And I think he was only introduced in season two. So he was a later addition. Pips, Ambassador. Oh,
Pips. I'm going to give this episode 3 pips. I'm tempted to go 3.5.
High
because
praise.
I think it swings for the fences. And at the end of the day, as a whole, I think the show is better off to have an episode that gives more context for the Upper Deckers. And I think it's needed. Yeah. Even though I would rather spend time with my people and know what happens to them, because I know it's the end, I think that it serves the greater story really nicely. And it's a really fun look at a day in the life on a starship.
Yeah, I am so conflicted because...
I think I'm going to go a solid 3 pipper.
I'm objectively going to give it 3 pips as well.
Wow.
Even though my heart and my enjoyment says like 1 pip, but like functionally and what it's trying to do in the story, it does make sense and it does work. It just doesn't work for Ian so well.
Well, I didn't really find myself laughing a ton. I wasn't like, oh, that was fun. The Billup stuff, I was in for that one. It was a crazy episode where a lot happened, and I just think I respect it more than I am like, man, that was my episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm trying to grade it based on like my respect for what it was trying to do, rather than I didn't enjoy 50% of it, and then I really enjoyed the other 50% of it. So it's really, really hard. So I think I'll hover on 3 and still think about it. Anything else before we go into some sins?
Nope.
All right, let's head over to engineering to do some sins and fix the rickety jerry-rigging stuff that I've had to hold together in engineering. Sorry, Ambassador. Watch out for the cables.
Okay.
Metal stations, red alert.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is about sin, even our beloved Star Trek. We talked about a lot of stuff that didn't work. Did you have any plot, any weird sins, anything that you want to, sin, Ambassador?
There was one that I thought was a pretty significant sin, which is, so they defeat the bad guys and then the captain of the other ship says that, he gets all of them away, like he emergency beams them back away. But in the final scene, you see one being led away with a tuba on his head, and that they would have all have been beamed off.
That's very true.
So good point. I didn't like that.
Yeah. Why did he get left behind? That's a good point.
Why was he special?
My biggest sin of the episode was that we didn't get to see the awesome episode the Mariner described, where they get sucked into a painting and then they have to escape from the painting. That sounded incredible.
We have a sin like episode describes a better episode.
Yes, really, and I know that's deliberate because you can describe whatever you want and it doesn't necessarily, like the synopsis doesn't mean it would have been a great episode, but I love that conceit and I'm just like, oh man, I want to see the paint episode. That sounded great.
Yeah.
Your turn, Ambassador.
Multiple sins from Flyboy. I'm adding 57 sins. Wow. For all of the times someone should have called for red alert and did not. I was trying to actually count, but then I got bored with it and made the number up.
Yeah, a lot That's of true. Red alert worthy stuff happening, which leads to my next sin that the lower, where were our lower decks crew? I know they were like, hey, did we miss something? Apparently something happened. Freeman did a ship-wide announcement giving out compliments. They were invaded by the Clickets. So much happened. How did they miss? And I guess that's the joke. But how did they miss everything that happened on the ship? What were they doing?
Yeah. Sin from David, an hour-long solo sousaphone recital. I agree.
Yes.
Make it one song. It doesn't need to be multiple.
Yeah. Short and sweet. Keep it enjoyable.
I attended a tryouts recently, and the length of the music was supposed to be a certain number of bars of music so that, you know, everybody is just performing their tryout piece and then moving on to the next thing. And some parents did not adhere to that. And so we got to hear children singing entire songs as best that they could.
I mean, cut them off.
Whoever's in charge should cut them off. You never work in the...
Oh, okay.
The theater industry for children.
Let them complete it, but fail them because you didn't read the instructions. Like, your performance was great. You self-indulgent toad. You didn't read the instructions and gave me the whole song.
I just realized this is why Simon Cowell is the way he is. Like, he's English.
Yeah, that's it. Instructions are important. They're there for a reason.
Don't ever compare me
to Simon Cowell. He's an absolute gallivanting knob. Right, okay. I'm questioning why Billups has to get creative with repairs. It's not like they're in the middle of nowhere. Like, why does he have to jerry-rig stuff? Why can't he
just... That is an argumentative sin. You don't know the situation.
I don't, but Geordi doesn't have to. Like, I don't get why he has to make shit up on the fly on the Cerritos and not repair it and then just forgets.
I like this one there it is. This one's from Flyboy. It reminds me of my sin after reading this one would be not having had Shax in therapy already. Like,
yes.
The fact that he's just now realizing that it's a viable outlet.
All in therapy.
I feel like that's a standard that everyone who works on the Starship should be in therapy. Flyboy Sin is Shax, say something, damn it. What is it with Starfleet officers that they seldom report hallucination symptoms until it's too late?
That's so true.
Reg Barclay?
Yeah.
Can tell you how that plays out, Mr. Shax.
Uh-huh. Well, that was the transporter thing. He's hallucinating his glowing arm and doesn't report it until it's way too late.
Yes. Yeah. You know how most of the episodes we have the all of this could be solved with better communication cliches going on?
Yeah.
I guess this would kind of be in that category this time. Like, this just one say would, something. Yeah.
So this is, and that's very much in keeping with TNG, like not communicating in case, like, what, are they going to think you're insane? Like, they see strange shit all day long. If you say you're hallucinating something, they're going to believe you. Like, they just will.
And David points out, why didn't Anna or Miglimo check out Doug?
Yeah, right.
Like, go and like check on Shax because he zones out and then he excuses himself right in the middle of the briefing.
Yeah. And like, are Shax and T'Ana still together? Like, shouldn't she be more concerned that her partner is immediately left the briefing?
So, yeah. Right. Like, what an interesting character trait that the person that you have been with has done something so out of the ordinary, but you want to have somebody rip your atoms apart so you can feel pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting psychology there. What else did I have? I just have, it does not look like a cow. That was my sin.
That's funny.
It does not.
Another one from David. If Dr. T'Ana is that indestructible, why isn't she leading every away mission?
I thought that as well. Yeah. Like,
what a great point.
She actually is indestructible. It's insane.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. She gets fully shot on and, like, set to kill. I think my last one would be you have the entire galaxy to choose from for your anniversary dinner, and yet you still choose Paris.
I thought you might have that one.
That's like, it's not even the best place on Earth you could have picked, let alone the galaxy. And maybe it holds some significant value to them, but it's Paris's romantic cliche, and it is not.
I'll go over more in the outtakes of things we didn't get to in the chat's sins for today.
Okay, we have time for an email this week. Let's head over to the briefing room. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your messages from Discord, Twitch, and, well, email. We have a first-time emailer. Thank you, Max, for your lovely email. To start, I love the podcast and have been listening since it first aired and was mentioned on a former Cinema Sins podcast. Yay, thank you for listening for so long. On the topic on the last podcast, which I think was a couple of weeks ago, you had mentioned wanting to know what a person who had never watched Star Trek before but started with Lower Decks would think of the show. So I think me and Jonathan were talking about this. Like, and I'm sure we've mentioned it
it's
as well.
It's a great question.
How, if Lower Decks is your first Star Trek, how does it hit you? Max continues. Well, I have the answer. My fiance has just started watching through the show after I was doing a rewatch before season 5 dropped, and she was really into it. So she started watching it all over from the beginning, and she loves the show. I've had to explain a few references if it was necessary to the plot, but she seems to be following well enough on her own. As of this email, she just got into the season 3 finale and was really surprised by the twist at the end. So to answer the question, if someone can enjoy the show without any knowledge of the series as a whole, yes. But I have to say that the show itself is easy to appeal to a general audience with the humour, especially if that is the humour one would be into, and my fiancé is very much into that type of humour. I'm going to try and get her into Deep Space Nine next.
No! That's too big of a jump!
I did reply, and I think Max agreed. That's a little bit of a big jump, so I've recommended Strange New Worlds to kind of ease back in, because they'll all, Max's fiance will also have the joy of a certain Those Old Scientists episode if she loves Lower Decks so much, and that connection. So yeah, that's really, really interesting to me, and I love that.
I would go to Prodigy, I think, next, even though I've never watched it.
It's a different...
You always hesitate with Prodigy, which is probably the reason that I hesitate to watch it, but it's animated to animated.
Yeah, the animated is about the only thing it shares, though. It's a very different humor. It's very detached from a lot of the Star Trek that we know. It's not a bad entry. It's not a bad next step. It's definitely on the list. I'd probably do Strange New Worlds or Prodigy.
If the person's like, oh my God, I want to know more about the Star Trek universe, then jump into like the deeper stuff like Strange New Worlds or whatever. But like if they just are sort of like, yeah, it's okay, then just, yeah, it's okay over on the next animated, maybe.
Yeah, no, I get that logic. Let's just do the animated series from the 70s. That's Trial by Fire. If you like that, then you're going to like all of it.
We should just do a podcast where we have, you and I and maybe like one other super nerd, right?
Yeah, and we just watch Star Trek? Yeah.
No. That's what we're doing now.
Shit.
Minus the other guy.
Shit.
Or gal. And then we have two people. There's the person that wants to introduce. So there's person A who wants to introduce their person B to Star Trek.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Haha. And how to do it.
Our job as the panel is to find the perfect episode. And then their homework is that they go watch it. And then we just ask them later how it went.
There is an actual great format there for like a debate episode. If like a few of us, like if I came with the 5 that I think, you came with the 5 that you think, a third person comes with 5 that they think.
5 is too fucking many.
No, 5 individual episodes.
Oh.
And then like which would like do like an elimination round of which episode wins, or just are you thinking just like a big debate about which series to start with?
I wasn't thinking a debate at all,
the debate is
we're
great.
We're very different people. I was thinking like we get to dig into the person's life and kind of go,
oh, and
so
tailor it to
what
them.
Kind of things do you enjoy? And you just ask questions, get to know them, and then by getting to know them, by the end, you have a suggestion. And since I know shit about Star Trek, that's not true anymore, but I know very little about Star Trek, you and the other person would be the ones that are like going back and forth with ideas. And my job would be to dig into their psyche and learn more about them, because I like to do that a lot.
I'm making notes. We're going to cut all of that out of the show because nobody should steal that idea from us. We are trademarking, copywriting that. Captain's Pod 2024. How to track your significant other.
Why is it a significant other? It could be anybody. It could be a mom wanting to introduce their kid.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
How to Trek a Human into Star Trek.
What the Trek?
Yeah, What the Trek. That's the title for. I seriously need to take all of this out of the show.
Take it out of the show.
Max did continue to say that his fiance really loved the Enterprise jumpsuits from Starbase 80 as well. Did you hate them? Did you not like them? This was the jumpsuit that I was wearing, or did you like it? I can't remember. The blue one. You said,
whatever
I think you said
you
it looked like
wearing?
Garbage. Yeah.
The one that you were wearing was a costume.
Go on.
The one that's drawn is intentional.
Okay, thanks. That's wow. What a diplomatic way to say that.
So, you know, do I like what you were wearing? It was a clothes.
It covered my parts. It wasn't the best. It's not the best fit.
I think it's the color combination.
What, with my face or my beard?
No. Just like the clothes themselves. I think it wasn't it like
it's all
the
blue.
Bright blue with a yellow patch on the shoulders.
Yeah, it's navy blue with like it's gold trim.
That wasn't gold. That was yellow.
No, it was yellow. Yes, it was quite.
I didn't like that.
No,
but that's just
that's
me.
That's
that is
totally
me.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well,
it's like crayon colors instead of.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's
inexpensive
just, for perspective. I loved almost every single thing in Picard because it was basically looked like wool, woven, thick, gray, black, layering textures. And that I love. Yours was like, have piece of fabric, will glue more fabric onto fabric. And that
was the description.
Super fun sometimes for what you're using it for.
We got to get some Picard clothes, damn it.
But the jumpsuit to me just looks a bit like, I'm going to take the garbage out.
That's fair. It's not a great quality. It's not a great material. It's okay.
It wasn't about the material. It was like, it's like what they're doing on Starbase 80.
Oh.
It's like you're...
They're astronauts. It's practical. They're not quite space people
How
yet.
How is it practical if you're an astronaut?
Because it had lots of pockets. Way more pockets than the TNG uniform. Way more pockets.
You don't know that. They could have been very slim, like hidden pockets. Like
I don't
pockets.
Think they were able to hide much with those outfits.
Can you imagine? Like I want to live in the future because we don't need pockets.
I think we're always going to need pockets.
For what?
My Werther's Originals. Where are my little treats going to be?
But what if Werther's Originals are now just something that like is a really thin piece of...
I don't live in that future with very thin Werther's Originals. That's sad. Anyway, thank you, Max, for that email. It is fascinating to hear somebody watch Lower Decks as their first entry into Star Trek. It's really cool. And I said to Max, it gives me a lot of like hope and like a lot of like gratitude for Lower Decks because I'm not just enjoying it because of all the references. Like it actually has broad comedy appeal to other people as well.
Yep. And thanks for writing. And you can write too. Oh, listener, viewer, captainspod@gmail.com. Nope, just kidding. captainspod@cinemasins.com.
Well, next week's episode is called, and I love this episode. It might be my favorite episode of the entire season. It's called Fisher Quest. And the reason I love that so much is because the show is called Star Trek, and this is Fisher Quest because they're going to be chasing after the fishers in space that they've had to, like, repair. So maybe this is... Obviously, episode 9 and 10 are going to be connecting some shit together. So I just think it's really clever to call it Fisher Quest instead of Star Trek. I love that.
Are you saying fish or fissure?
Fissure. Fisher Quest. Fissure. Fisher
until,
Quest. Fisher
until
Quest.
The, until the chat
Everyone
typed
thinks
it
I
out.
Said Fisher.
I thought you were saying Fisher. And so I was like, I have been missing, like, why are there fish in space? Is a fish a type of a class of starship? Because I come from a fishing family, and because I have a vivid imagination, all of the starships suddenly turned into trout and bass. And when you were, like, talking about going and getting all the fishes, I was seeing them, like, cast the fishing pole out and then reel things in.
Yeah. That's on me. I'm sorry.
And I was attempting to figure out like what I was going to say next. And so I'm really grateful that the chat typed it out. So it's Fissure Quest. Got it. Okay.
Next week's episode is called Fissure Quest, which I think is...
No. Can we say Fishing Quest, please? Because when you said... It's my favorite. I was like, I didn't know Ian was a fisherman.
No.
Like, my grandpa would be so proud.
No, it's just Ian has trouble with some words. That's what it is. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone.
Oh, God.
Fissure quest.
I'm so happy right now. Like, if Iris wants to go fishing next year. If you can come visit.
Yeah.
Can we call it the Fissure quest?
Yes, and we can call it the Fissure quest. We're going on a Fissure quest.
You can put on Star Trek uniforms and go fishing. Oh, man. It is rare these days that there's a word that you'll say that I genuinely think it's different.
And so I don't think that's an English thing. I do think that's an Ian being stupid.
I'm not making fun of you. That was fantastic, and I loved it.
Any predictions for next week's episode that doesn't involve fishing? It's about fissures. Fissures.
He was like, oh, I guess I'm going to be like minnows and little fisher hats with like the little fisher hooks hanging down, like one big red bobber. You know, that circular spherical medical ship that you've talked about before, but it's just a big red and white bobber.
Olympic class. Yeah.
I have no predictions. My brain is completely fucked.
If you want to send us any emails or anything, send them to captainspod at cinemasins.com. Join our lovely crew of Discord people on the CinemaSins discord.gg/cinemasins, where we have a lovely Star Trek channel, and you control me for saying fissures instead of fissures as well. Fissures sounds weird. That's not a real word.
It's weird. Like when you're saying water versus a Walter, but you're saying the same word. It's fissures versus fissures.
Water and Walter are very different. Water. Yes. Two different words.
Water.
I'm Captain Ian, and why are we mutilating doors?
Oh, don't be sad, Ian. I love it. Are you sad?
No. Give me your quote.
Are you sad?
No.
You are?
No.
Okay. And I've always wanted to get stuck in a painting.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
I decided to take a shower. I really screwed up the whole entire being on time thing. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I decided that even though you can't smell me, I can smell me, and that is enough.
That might affect the performance of you. Being a normal human being.
Yeah.
It's a difficult performance to maintain, let alone when you're stinky. We wouldn't want people to see what you're actually like.
No. I think Iris says water more English than you now.
Yeah, I think she does. Water.
Because you've been trying to go full American accent, and she's trying to go full English accent to say it like you do.
It'd be something crazy. She doesn't like it when I say water.
No.
She doesn't like it.
She likes it when you say it properly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This one was from Flyboy. Oh my God, she's seven. How many years of Fridays have I wasted here?
Wasted.
All of them, Flyboy.
Wasted.
You're wasting.
I take umbrage with that.
No time is wasted if it's something you enjoy doing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that is wasted then.
Wow. What if we find that Lower Decks are not in the main Trek universe?
Oh, fascinating. Yes, that would give them a free pass. It's just whether they care enough to do that. If they're really like precious about, okay, the stuff we've done is too weird to be proper Star Trek, then we'll just say, oh, this all happened in another universe where things are allowed to be more ridiculous. What if they, yeah, man. But haven't they already acknowledged that with the Strange New Worlds thing? Because they crossed over out of animation into live action.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, they kind of have touched our quote-unquote reality a little bit more than...
Yeah.
Maybe if they hadn't have done that, we would have that potential more strongly. David says that those old scientists negates that
possibility.
Yeah,
and I think
though,
that's where I'm at, because the fact that Boimler and Mariner don't say, oh, I look different, like...
Yeah.
That wasn't a crossover out of animation. Like, for that episode... Everything was live action and everything was animated. It's all at once. So I don't...
It's kind of like the lens with which we're looking into that world is an animated lens, but it's still real.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that because it gives you nothing's then real. Because if you're telling me that 5 years If you tell me that at the start of the story, that's different to making it a final twist at the end. Like, I would hate that to be a retcon at the end. I don't like that.
Yeah, it would really undermine a bunch if they did kind of put it into a different universe. I feel like if they had been doing more extreme things, I would want that to be the case. But everything's on the border enough for me, even though I'm not like the Star Trek expert person. Even the things that are more extreme for me, for you, Ian, to say that you think it could exist in the same universe makes me think that it could.
So. I think it's just there. It gets bloody close sometimes. But then again, there are episodes of Voyager and TNG that get very close. Like, Voyager redefines what Warp 10 means and turns people into lizards. Like, there are ridiculous... Like, if Threshold, that episode where Janeway and Tom get turned into lizards, happened in Lower Decks, I would be furious and I would be like, you're breaking the rules and this is only because it's animated. Like, Star Trek still does live action stuff that I'm like, nope, that's fucking weird.
Let's see. Sin, the episode premise is that we finally have a chance to see the senior officers in their own adventures, but we've seen them in action many times before, skillfully woven into the Elders?
Lower Deckers.
Ah, that makes sense.
Elders also makes sense. Yes, I think so.
I think so too, but they obviously wanted to make that comeback. I wonder how long it's been since they had one. Maybe they thought, hey, it's been X amount of episodes, let's do another one.
Well, I did think it was weird that, like, Shax has been so absent for so long as well. So yeah. I guess they were saving him up, which is a shame because, like, I think it's Fred Tatasciore, Fred. Anyway, the voice actor for Shax is great. I love him.
I really, really, really want to get a roly-poly cow popple. I just feel like that would make my life a little bit better.
No, that way lies madness. You can't buy your way. You can't buy your way into happiness. Do you know how, like, innocently you stumbled upon consumerism there? Like, I will just buy happiness. This thing will replace the thing that's annoying me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And what about Moopsie versus the cricket? The clickets. I kept calling them crickets.
I think Moopsie wins that one. I think
so too. Unless they don't have any bones.
No, I assume they do.
But do crickets have bones?
Yeah, they have an endoskeleton, don't they?
No, they don't have bones. They have exoskeletons.
Aren't their carapaces made of bones?
Exoskeletons, let's see. They don't have a backbone or bones. They have exoskeletons, which is a hard shell that covers their body and protects their soft organs. And it's made of chitin, a hard protein, not bone.
Oh, then maybe the clickets win.
I think the clickets might win. Because Moopsie wouldn't have any interest in them, but the clickets would. Unless Moopsie can suddenly have, like, compliment things.
I think Clickit would start, like, harvesting Moopsies for their ability to suck bones and then cloak them. Oh my gosh, if you had a cloaked Moopsie, game over.
Oh shit.
Game over.
Speaking of buttholes, my cat's butthole smells super bad.
Why were you sniffing it?
Because he put it right in my face, of course. It was an accidental whiff. It wasn't a purposeful whiff.
That makes sense.
Today I went and I spent $30 on raw cat food.
Interesting. Okay. How much raw cat food are we talking about? Because that's important to judge the price. Wait.
A bag.
A bag of raw cat food. It doesn't come in bags. What are you talking about?
So it's like you hydrate it. It's dehydrated. And it's like these sort of squishy pellets. And then you shut up. You put stuff looking at me that way. Don't look at me that way. And listen, if you were here, maybe you would have stopped me. But you're not here.
Yes, I would. Dehydrated cat food?
Yeah, yes. And there were so many different varieties. I was literally stood in the aisle, just confused and overwhelmed for probably 15 minutes.
Okay.
So you take it and then you add water to it and then it kind of like rehydrates and then you can feed it to your cat, but it's 95% body parts.
Right.
Why? Like it is their organs, their bones, their meat, all of it.
Yeah.
Just together.
So what's the logic behind buying it?
Okay. So great question. This is probably controversial, but just, I guess, the idea that cats usually, and dogs as well, would be eating more of a raw diet and it's healthier for them. And so rather than just dry food. Now, I try to give all of my animals dry food that has good ingredients in it.
Yeah, like the really healthy shit.
Like the stuff where, like, the number one ingredient isn't just wood pulp or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think that's a thing. But yeah, I know what you mean. like filler. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a trend happening where you also can put like toppers on their food, or you can replace their diet entirely with like a raw diet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very expensive.
Yeah.
So I thought that I would try to just do like every once in a while, like here have like 5 pellets that I've rehydrated. So I got home with it and I thought I would give it a go. So I opened the bag up and it smells like body part. And so I'm like, oh, well, that's what it says it is. 'Cause wow. And then I dumped it into this little container and then I added the appropriate water, I hope, fingers crossed. And then I'm like, man, how long is this going to take to hydrate? Like, because guess who caught whiff of it and was flipping the fuck out on the counter? The cat was like the most excited cat. So you know how my counter, it's like, it's not a complete square, obviously, because you have to walk into the kitchen, but it's a good portion.
Yeah, it's a like, big it's, island. Well,
it's
not an
enclosed.
Island. Yeah,
it's more enclosed,
it's a big
you know?
U-shape, yeah.
Yes, and technically, you could stand as a cat on one side and walk all the way around, but he never comes past the sink. He always stays on kind of the little island bit
or
whatever.
Yeah, too much danger of getting wet with the sink.
He was finding me.
Oh.
Wherever I went, he was pulling my arm towards his face.
Oh, that's
he
amazing.
Put his head in it. He was meowing and chittering and chirping and he was super happy. So I spent, this is probably another reason why I'm late, I spent 15 minutes carefully stirring it up to try to hydrate it faster
and breaking
it down just so that he could eat it faster.
This is for one portion?
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that every time. I got to figure out a better system. In fact, Danae tried to start off super smart and I put the water in and I put it up in the cupboard to let it sit. And then I read some of the directions and realized it's probably not smart. But also the cat opened the cupboard.
Yeah.
Climbed up into the cupboard halfway to put his face in it to lick it because he was so happy.
Cats have thumbs. We just haven't seen them. That's a thing a cat, every cat owner knows. The thumbs are there. I, as your friend, Danae... Yeah. Uh-huh. And I care for you.
Thank you.
Why have you picked a food that adds time to your routine?
To be fair, I did not know it was going... okay.
Because you know why I ask it like that.
Let me just answer the question straight up. Two reasons. One, I am hoping he kills less birds.
Not going to happen. Because they don't kill
but
for
maybe,
food. They don't kill for
but
food.
Maybe
they do not kill for food.
Their
they
hearts do. Out.
It's all ceremony.
He opens the chest and sticks his face in there and pulls out the organs and eats them.
It's like opening a present. It's not eating. It is not for sustenance. That is a instinct to hunt. It is not to eat. Yeah, it's not for sustenance, though. It's like, I killed this. This is the next step. Arr! Because there's some hangover there where it was once upon a time for food.
So you think he's like not fully wild animal?
Cats and dogs are not fully wild animals. That's what I'm saying.
So number one, I'm like, maybe you're getting some nutrition from those dead birds and that you're not getting from the food that I'm giving you. And maybe it's raw. So I'm going to try it out because
I get the logic.
Stand and just meow at me like he's going to die. And I've given him goat's milk and I've given him like really expensive fucking cat food and I've given him wet cat food and dry cat food and I'm like, well, maybe this is what you need.
No, because he meowed at you. They're addicts. They don't care what the drug is. They'll just take it all. And to them, their
but
drug is food.
But he was eating out of the dog bowl as well. Like,
because
he is
was
starving.
No, not because he's starving, because the food is there. It's because it's available. This is why pets get fat. This is why he keeps meowing, because he's got you under his thumb. You're his dealer, but he doesn't have to pay. He just has to pay in meows. He knows that the meow will get him the sweet, sweet meth that he needs.
Yeah, now I'm giving him raw meth.
Yeah,
like now his
him
drug is just amped all the way up.
Shit. You're like, wow, you know what this meowing did? It got me even better food. Do you know what I should do next? Meow more to get even
not.
Better
I'm
food.
I'm so confused. I'm like, just fucking... Cat, what do you need? An option two was like, if there's a chance I could give them something better, I think I should try it and maybe it'll be really good.
Great motivation. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you do not give in to terrorists, animals, and children. And you're giving in. Captain Spot, star date 17/20/64.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a visual leap from the world of cinema scenes to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your captain, Ian Whittington, and with me as always, a minute to her feels like a week for everyone else. It's Ambassador Danae. I will now turn her volume back up.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.